All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
You are now listening to the Coding Behind the Wheel podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Wheel Wednesday. I'm Scott from Koenig. That's Nick from Koenig.
What up?
And we are here to bring you another Wheel Wednesday podcast.
Yes, we are, Scott.
That's true. So, let's see. We dropped a piece of content last Friday, so if you haven't checked it out on our YouTube channel.
I forgot what we dropped.
I don't remember either. Oh, it was about fastening wheels.
No, it wasn't.
Before we get into this, if you wouldn't mind subscribing down below and smash that like button, just go ahead and like really dig into that thing. You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh. You know, we do this so frequently, you know, it all blends together. I do remember though, it's properly test fitting your wheels. That's
true. So we had a comment that was actually on the YouTube channel on the video that said something to the effect of trying to be funny about it, but you know, whatever, I don't care. It says, why do you test fit wheels? And the guy's like, to see if they fit. It's like, yeah, right. Here, you know, the thing is that, and I've said this before, is that it seems that the most primitive and easy topics are the ones that we get the most amount of questions about.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many people call every day, and I listen to the phone lines and some of the texts, and they're talking about things where they only figure out all the problems that they're going to have after they put tires on the wheels, right? So you spent the time to go down to the shop. You spent the time to leave your car there usually. You spent the money to mount and balance the set of wheels. In some cases, you got your TPMS light configured to the new sensors. Mm-hmm. If you bought new sensors, you've done all this to find out
your wheels
don't fit, right? So this is kind of like, if you don't want to look at it as a tech video, look at it as a PSA. It's a public service announcement.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I mean, like, there's people like, I'll just put it on and see if it bolts up. Like, okay, it fits. But sometimes you might not notice things just by bolting it onto the car. If you don't rotate that wheel, you may not realize that it's crashing against your caliper. If you don't look at it, if you just try and tighten it down a little bit, be like, okay, like, it's good. Like, let's put a tire on it. Or, like, if you don't test to see if with the tire it'll fit or won't crash any of like your suspension components or the body or anything like that. So
yeah, like, it's true. I think one of my favorite, I'll share one of my favorite stories. I don't believe that they're watching. I don't believe that they'll equate this to them, and I'm not going to use any names. So I don't really remember their name anyway. We had a call a couple years ago, and somebody said that they put their wheels on and now they can't move the car. We're like, there's nothing on the wheel that could possibly keep the car from moving. Like, you sure you don't have your e-brake up? You sure, like, something else didn't happen while you were working on the car? Nope. It is your wheels. I take my wheels back off. And when I put my stock wheels back on, the car rolls fine. Put your wheels back on the car. They don't move. Now, there's one obvious thing that we're glancing over when we're thinking about why this would happen. And it's because we just felt it was so self-explanatory. So it doesn't take a tech more than a few minutes before he asked the pivotal question. Okay, so when you bolt the wheels on, you made sure that they rotate all the way around before you move them. The guy goes, no, I can't do that. Because if I do that, then the brake caliper won't fit between the spokes, and it hits the spokes on the back if I try to bolt them the other way. The caliper was protruding.
And it was rubbing against the back.
And so what they were doing is they were putting it into the window of the wheel because that's where the wheel would bolt on.
So like it bolted up here, but it wouldn't bolt up here.
Yeah.
So they mounted it and then they said that
the car wouldn't move. And because as they tried to, they didn't have enough power. They weren't gunning it. But as they tried to whatever, it would kind of just get hung up on the wheel. The point of this story isn't to call anybody out. The point of this story is to say that we know that for the majority of people, some of these topics will get really primitive and don't really need any review. However, for every one of you that's out there that gets this stuff, that's smart, that's a car person,
or has experienced it.
Right. Right. That's a better word. I didn't mean smart in that sense.
Yeah.
You know, just wheel educated, right? There's going to be somebody that is really excited about changing the look of their car for the first time, that doesn't have any experience with cars, that doesn't know anything except they went to a website, they put their car in, they bought wheels and tires, they're coming there, and all they know is I just got to take a few bolts off and put a few bolts on.
Pretty much.
And that's why we continue to put out different content, and we cover everything from really technical stuff to not so technical stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much.
Cool. So let's get into today's topic. Today's topic is kind of an interesting one, and the reason is because we did a few weeks ago, if you go look, we gave our opinions on – it's probably a month ago now. We gave our opinions
It was about a month. I'd say it was maybe a month or a little bit over.
So we gave our opinions on the top five cars that you could get for under $5,000 to go racing with, but – we did grip racing,
right.
Track, you know, like time attack, road racing.
I didn't do my – well, not that I didn't do my homework, but I didn't really understand. And I came up with a list of half drift, half road racing cars.
Right. Nick did do that.
But today we're going to do – under what budget are we going to do?
$10,000.
Under $10,000? All right. So today we're going to do top five car picks under – $10,000.
He missed it altogether. So today we're going to be doing the top five drift cars that you could get for under $10,000.
Right.
Yeah.
And we kind of decided this last minute, so some of mine are well under $5,000.
Not bad. With defense to Nick, I did come in at the last moment and say, you know what, we're going $10,000. We already did a $5,000. Let's do $10,000.
So my cars still qualify.
Okay. So Nick's list you can apparently use for $5,000 and $10,000. We didn't discuss what our lists are. So this is the first time we're going to really talk about this now. Now, that's the first thing. And the next thing is we've already decided, if you go back and look, we took the video. We did our podcast, and then we actually made a video with a lot of our friends, guys from Speed Academy, with Dave from Speed Academy. We had some of our racers and stuff like that.
Yeah, we had the James Mechanical Houghton. Advantage guys.
Yeah.
We had James Houghton. We had
Chris Borsma.
Eric Cattell.
So we brought in some drivers, and we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to do it this time with some of our drifters.
Drift guys. Yeah.
And I think it will be pretty fun to hear kind of what they say. And this is again just going back to the grassroots level. So,
right.
Let's get into it.
Okay. Double checking my list.
No. We're recording. We're not messing this up this time.
How do you want to do this? Do you want to go one and one? Do you want to say all yours? I'll say all of mine, or I don't know.
Let's go.
Talk about it. If I agree with it, or like if it was on my list.
Okay, we'll alternate. We'll see. All right.
Okay.
Let's take a peek here. I'm going to take the most obvious one that's going to be on my list because I think it fits just oh so well, and that is the 350Z. So
yeah, I'm not surprised.
No, but it's not because I deeply love the car. This is because I believe one. What?
And own one.
Yeah, but I believe I believe that the 350Z itself, you can find really good ones for $10,000. So now you have a choice of, you know, where in that $10,000 do you want to be? You want to be a 7,500? You want to be a 5,000? You know, get a really run down one? Do you want to spend $10,000?
It depends what you're looking for.
Right.
It depends on what you're looking for because, like, for $10,000, you can get a really clean 350Z. I'm talking about clean interior, exterior, like, low-ish miles, like 70,000-80,000 mile range.
Yep.
Or if you're going full race car and you just want to be like, all right,
I need a shell.
You could get a shell. I was gonna say I'd get like $5,000 and then put a whole bunch into it, like suspension components and like work the motor and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think 350Z offers you, and I've said it in the other podcast, it offers you a lot of options. You get a lot of aluminum parts. The car is pretty nimble. It's pretty pointed. If you don't have one of the LSD rears, which are arguably not the best, you can just open up the pumpkin, have somebody weld up the gears. Right. All of a sudden, you have a really affordable welded diff. And then I also think that you run into things like it's got a carbon fiber drive shaft. You can reduce some of the weight in the car and make it even better. It makes ample power to be able to go out and drift, but you can easily add some power into it.
Right.
And if you get down the road, and choose to go with like a go to Sikki and maybe get a mount kit, you could always do like an LS swap at a later date or something to that effect. So I think the car has legs and growth there, and I also think it's they sold so many of them. There's a lot of aftermarket support for it.
There's a huge aftermarket support for it.
Right. So I think 350Z is a good choice for this. And I would even venture to say that we have to be at some point running out of S chassis cars. So as soon as you get there, there's going to have to be a new S chassis replacement. I have a feeling that between BMW and 350Zs, you may be seeing those as being the next 240s.
So I actually put that on my list, and I made sure to keep the 350Z off my list because I knew you were gonna say it. So just to add a little bit more diversity, I wanted to keep it off my list.
Okay.
But you actually just touched upon the next thing I was gonna say is 240s.
240s. All right.
You know, you can definitely pick up an S13 for $5,000.
Yep.
The drift tax on those cars has skyrocketed.
I think it's borderline unworth it.
Definitely not, but people still do it. Okay. They're still cool cars.
Okay.
But since we bumped it up to $10,000, mm-hmm. I would say S14 and maybe like a slightly beat up S15.
Well, but S15s aren't really here, so you're talking about a right-hand drive imported one?
Yes. I'm talking like beat up.
Nick's stretching, but I'm going to give you the S14. Let's go
up. We also have international people.
That's fair. That's fair. Wait, nice recovery. All right. So I agree with Nick. I think that if you can find really clean one or whatever and you're prepared to spend the money, I think as long as you're throwing $10,000 out, I don't personally think I would spend $10,000 on whatever. But if let's say you find the clean one or one that's worth it, and you're not doing the type of drifting where you figure there's going to be a lot of tandeming, if you're just doing some grassroots stuff,
yeah,
I can see that being – all right. So – good. I already mentioned this next one, so I think I have to do it next, and that's the BMW chassis. Now, when you get up to $10,000,
which ones are? You got to be a little bit more specific.
I'm going to.
Okay.
So everybody's going to say E30. All right, I understand, but you can get those cheaper than that price range.
You can get it for under $5,000.
E36, E46. Yep.
That was one on my list.
Right, I know. I'm sure it would be.
I put the E36.
So those, again, would be there. But I think now when you go up to $10,000, you can go E90.
You can get E90s for under $10,000. What type of condition are we talking, though? Higher mileage.
Yeah, I think you're going to find higher mileage. But I think you're going to find a 150,000-mile car.
Yeah, but you can – like
that's, right, but it's not the end of the world. But but I think you may find – you know, there were so many of those – that platform sold, that vintage sold, that I think you're going to find a lot of cars that were well-maintained by first-owner buyers or different things like that are out there, and they're just selling their used car.
Pretty much.
Because they've gotten to the top end of the mileage that they want to be with.
And they're like, I'm done with this.
Right. So. And a lot of people argue that the top mileage range for somebody that's owning their own car is probably closer to 100. So there may be a lot of options there. And I think what happens is when you get to that high mileage E90 range, a lot of cars end up going as trade-ins to dealers. So you'll find them wholesaled out to, you know, private car lots or to auctions and different things. So I think E90 is really – now pretty obtainable for that $10,000 and under range. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a good starting port. A lot of aftermarket support, rear-wheel drive, you know, good following, makes decent power.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Nice.
So that's my next one.
So you just knocked one of mine out, which was the E36. Again, like under $5,000, you can – I'm going to keep – reiterating that all of these are under $5,000.
I'm not. I was just checking to make sure that your debit card that's exposed wasn't on camera.
It's okay. You can't see that.
I understand. I'm just making sure. Anyhow,
thanks.
Security.
This one might be, but it's okay.
All of it,
because that one doesn't work.
Just in case you need to know, his full name is Icolas Aruza. Very good.
All right. So the next one I have on here is the IS300.
Okay.
I threw the IS300 on there.
But now the majority of those cars are automatic.
Yes, but they do come manual.
Okay. And, I don't know if I've really ever seen too many of them.
Yeah, but you can swap the transmissions on them. Of course. A bunch of people I know have done it. So
okay. I'll give you that.
I think the IS-300, and like I price checked all these. Like definitely under 10 grand you can find them. Definitely under 5 grand you can find them. I saw some listed up for like for as low as 2,500 all the way up to 5 grand. Varying in condition and parts and whatnot.
And so just to be inclusive, I think we should lump the IS-200 in there as well.
Okay.
Just same thing, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
All right, so
we're going back. Let's see. All right.
You got to check your list?
I am. I'm going to thoughtfully try to come up with a car that I don't believe is on your list so that just in case, I don't knock you out too much more.
Okay.
I'm going to pick my next one is the C5 Corvette.
Interesting.
So I believe – well, let me tell you why. And I think that there may be potential for some people that are looking for a real low-buck option to potentially use like an SS Camaro, like early 2000s SS Camaro.
Mm-hmm.
The cars – both cars have LS1 engines in them.
Right.
So you already have a car that's – LS swapped, but it's, you know, obviously native to the car.
Mm-hmm.
Has aftermarket support. The cars are really affordable. In fact, if you're really on a budget, I think that SS Camaro could be a super win. They share a lot of parts and drivetrain components and suspension pieces from the Corvette. Mm-hmm. And they're a fraction of the cost if you can find them. But the C5 Corvette, I think you get decent pedigree. There's now people starting to make angle kits for the front of the cars.
Ooh.
And I think with a suspension option, I think you have an incredible starting platform. And there's been plenty of YouTubers that have started to play with this. And it seems that the C5 is becoming more and more prevalent into some people's conscious when they're considering about building some grassroots drift cars. So I'm going to say the C5. I think it's got a ton of potential. And I believe that as they become just even a little bit more affordable, you're going to find them becoming even more kind of on the scene, you know?
Is there a reason you would pick that over the Camaro or, like, the C5 instead of the Camaro? I'd pick a Corvette.
Yeah, I'd pick a Corvette any day. But, I mean, because I think that the – I'd pick a Corvette any day. I mean, I think that there's not a huge comparison
right
to them as far as their – I don't know. It's going to get confusing.
I wasn't thinking of the Camaro. I don't know why. Since we're talking American muscle, I did think about the Mustang GT.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Like, what was it? I think it was like the 2004 or 2005.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
I don't remember the years, but it was like 2005. It got to like 2008.
Like an S197 car.
I guess, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know much about Mustangs.
All right.
Yeah. But I have seen them on the track. I have seen people sliding them.
Yeah, like 05 to like 10, like 12, was it?
Yeah.
2011, 12, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of them mm-hmm. on tracks. I've seen a lot of videos of them. And
yeah.
There's definitely like really good aftermarket support out there. So I think mine was like, that was kind of crossing it before.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a little under, a little over. But under 10 grand, you can definitely pick one of those up.
That's fair. And actually, Mustang was one of the cars that I had on my list as well. So we got each other on that.
Nice.
So, yeah. So Mustang, let's see. We did the BMW stuff. So I guess getting around to my last slot here is the FRS BRZ. Well, you had that too, I guess?
No. It's interesting. I'm like, I thought about that too, but I was like, no.
It's not 5K?
It's not 5K.
FRS BRZ, the GT86, that platform, I believe, is – now, here's my thing. I think it's – to find one that's decent in majority of the country, I believe that you're going to have to spend in the upward north number of that 10K budget.
Mm.
Okay. So here's the disadvantage I would say about this car, and I was on the fence about using it, is that the car doesn't really have much power. Now, to get ready to start drifting with, I think that it's got plenty of aftermarket support, so you can get parts. I do think that the potential for swaps and swap kits will be more and more prevalent as time goes on. Mm-hmm. I do think that, you know, again, you probably can weld up the disc, a diff if you need to, you know, to add some extra beef back there. There's a lot of other things I think that the car is capable of. But I think the fact that it's slightly underpowered, you know, while it may be interesting to start to get your bearings in drift, I think to really sustain any decent courses, it could potentially be tougher.
Mm-hmm.
Because you run out of gas. You know what I mean? Like, you just kind of like you motor around. And I think anybody who's, you know, taken, whether it be stock Miatas or whatever it is, and tried to really drift with them, I think that you can do it. But, I mean, you must have to kick the hell out of the clutch. Like, oh, I mean, you must really beat that car up to get it to stay in drift, right? So that's my opinion.
I'd imagine.
What you got?
But continuing on with those cars, like, yeah, it's tough because, like, you're getting a beat-up one or slightly less
I think you can find a high-mileage regular one now.
Yeah?
I think so. At the top of 10K, I think you can. I think you can.
All right. Well, what I was going to say is, like, even if you're at 10K and you're at, like, a high-mileage one that's clean, if your budget's only 10K, you're still kind of at the limit for putting power into it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you're going to have to build on that.
So I definitely agree with that. So I cheated a little bit because you gave me the option for over $5,000. So I gave you an extra one. But I do have two here.
Okay.
I have the Miata.
Okay.
Because you can put power in it. For $5,000, you can.
And it's not that we haven't seen it. It's not that we haven't seen it before. Like, Danny George ran his Miata in FD Pro a few years back. So it's not that we haven't ever seen Miatas in drifting. I think for the average guy that's going to spend the money and go get it,
you can get a bunch of other things. Or, like,
maybe, I don't know. You could probably put a lot of budget behind a Miata, I guess. I don't know. Anyhow, continue.
In mind, I had, like, and this is definitely over the 10K budget, but, like, Mad Mike's Miatas. I was like, oh.
Mad Mike's engine costs more than that budget. Anyway. Now, what? I mean, so, Mad Mike, I'm actually more familiar with his RX-7 stuff.
So, don't quote me on this. I believe it's...
Are we talking about the new ND?
Yeah.
But that's way over. Then you can't get an ND for...
Well, no. When I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, Mad Mike just me out.
Oh, all
and
right.
I was no, obviously you can't buy
so
like
just
one of those.
I just want to be clear. So the car that inspired you was Mad Mike's four-rotor. his four-rotor... ND Miata.
Yeah, and we're talking $5,000 for.
I see how that $150,000 car inspired your 10K budget.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
oh man. Anyways, I still think there's a lot you can do with a Miata for $5,000, $10,000, 100%. Forget the first generation for a second. Like, you get the second generation, the Mazda Speed Miata. You can put a little bit of more power under the hood of that, or you could even go as far as getting like an NC Miata for like $7,000 and then drop another $2,000-$3,000 into that to turbo it or do whatever
right.
And get, you know? So I think in that aspect, I have heard some things though, and this is also why like I have another car.
You could also get an F-350 turbo diesel, really make a lot of power out of it, and then put the Miata in the bed and go drifting. All right, so what else you got?
I forgot what I was about to say.
The last car.
No, something before that.
Oh, well, that I can't help you with.
I don't remember, Scott. Anyways, the last car I was going to say is an FB or FC RX-7.
Okay.
I mean,
getting it, you know, the thing with the FC, though, I don't know about that I like the FB, but the FC I think is fine. It's just that, again, I think... I mean, unless you get like a Turbo 2 or something that has power.
Well, yeah, and drifting stock 240 isn't going to really
No, that's fair.
You have to, you got to put something some money into it. You got to swap that engine out. So using the RX-7 under the same context as that, as like, yeah, you're probably gonna have to swap that engine out or put some type of power under the hood. Yeah. I think getting started, it's a pretty good platform. I mean, you can find them for like, I see them as low as $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if the rotary goes to hell on you, you can just swap it out because that's the whole purpose anyway. So
right.
I've seen them for around that price, all the way up to maybe I think it was like 5 or 6 for like really like clean body and like the motor still runs good and all that. So RX-7.
All right. Well, I don't know that we came out with 5 cars.
We total. Came out with, well, not
we
five
came out
each.
With some cars that yeah. were around some 5. Cars.
Yeah.
I think we're probably closer to 7 or 8 if I count right. But anyhow, so that's our choices. What are your choices? Let us know down below. Let us know which cars you think you can get for $10,000 and go drifting with.
Right. And send us your Miata drifting videos because I want to see those.
Or just put down in the comments. just put down in the comments which cars you think. And we're going to try to do a follow-up video to this where we'll bring some of our drift friends in and let them weigh in on this debate.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun. I like the dynamic of the last one. The last one was pretty cool.
It was pretty good.
Pretty much like we were just having one big long conversation, but nobody was actually talking to each other.
That's true. That's accurate. All right, let's see. Let's recap real quick. We have Koenig Kickback, which just came out yesterday, so make sure that you go check that out. We go live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Instagram and on Facebook, and we do that whole question-answer car talk thing. So you want to even talk about this subject, make it happen. Let's see. And we don't have anything Thursday this week, I don't believe. But we have something for Friday.
Yep. What it is, I don't know yet.
Yeah. So Friday, make sure you tune into our YouTube channel, Koenig Wheels USA. Make sure if you're not subscribed with that notification bell, it's a sick thing to do because it will allow us to make sure that when we put up good content. And Friday is always the piece of content that's not like a podcast. So if you're looking for that. And again, Koenig Kickback that we put up yesterday, every Tuesday, is basically like a recap of the week prior, all the like big automotive news that came out of there. So we're trying to give you something just to watch. It's a quick watch. They're usually between 3 and 4.5 minutes, roughly.
Something like that.
So it's a quick watch. But anyhow, that's what we got going on. And yeah, that's what we got going on.
I'm laughing because I remembered what I was going to ask you.
What?
So I heard, and maybe I'll just cut this back, but I heard that from like one or two people why the Miata wouldn't be good for drifting is because its wheelbase is very short. What are your thoughts on that? I've never taken my Miata to drift on the track, so I wouldn't.
Well, I mean, I've never drifted anything like that. But like, I'm going to say, I guess I kind of agree. I think it depends on where you are in the spectrum of drift. I mean, going into FD last year, you had, you know, Frederick Osbo that for years campaigned that little tiny Corolla hatch. I think it makes it tough for some other drivers to go against them. But, I also think it's about car setup and stuff. So I don't know if I'm qualified to comment on this one, to be honest with you.
Okay. We'll ask our FD drivers.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyways.
Well, I think that's about it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you watching. It's always good to see you back here. And, again, we'll be back here next Wednesday, you know, around the same bat time, same bat channel.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. All right. So I guess that's it for this one. If you haven't subscribed, do that now. Click that button. Do all that good stuff. And we will catch you next time. Take care.
Peace.